chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I'm thrilled to have Dr. Tim Irwin on the show today. Tim is a best-selling author, speaker, consultant, psychologist, and a leading authority on leadership development and organizational effectiveness. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. Well, welcome to the Something Extra podcast. I am so delighted. I've been looking forward to this interview for a long time. And so I have my special friend here, Dr. Tim Irwin. Tim lives in Atlanta with his wife, and I don't want to embarrass you, Dr. Irwin, but I'm going to say a few things about you because I just want our listeners to understand who we're talking to here. It is such an honor and a privilege to have you on the show. You are a licensed corporate psychologist. You're a keynote speaker. You're a best-selling author. We're going to talk a lot about that. You're a management consultant. And Dr. Irwin, I just know that there's going to be so much good stuff here for our listeners, but what they may not, and I don't even know this about you, did you grow up in Atlanta?
I am a native of the Atlanta area, and actually I grew up in College Park, which used to be a little small town in rural Georgia, and suddenly the Atlanta airport appeared and took over our little town. I married an Oregonian, by the way, so we're on opposite sides of the continent from our origins.
How did that happen? Now, how did you meet an Oregonian?
You know, we met at a meeting, some mutual friends in North Dakota introduced us. I had to get a date that night, and she was cute. I just asked her out, and she said yes. And 3 weeks later, we were engaged.
My goodness. That is an incredible story. Well, you knew what you were looking for, right? And obviously, she did too. You and Ann, you're amazing people. But I know that you were an executive at an international consulting firm with over 300 offices worldwide. So you had a line of sight, Dr. Irwin, into a lot of different businesses, a lot of different leaders across different industries. And so I know that, you know, you are so passionate about leadership, you know, and you've authored 4 different New York Times bestselling books. And so I really want us to dig in here. You've got Run with the Bulls Without Getting Trampled. I love that title, by the way. Derailed is your second book, 5 Lessons Learned from Catastrophic Failure of Leadership. Then Impact, Leadership Changes Everything. And then your latest book is Extraordinary Influence. So I want to kind of start with Derailed. And I'm going to read something here that you said. Unregulated power, wealth, and fame can have a corrosive effect on our character. And you call it our core. So what is it that causes a leader to get derailed? Let's talk about that a little bit.
There are many causes, but it boils down to some consistent awarenesses that I had as I studied people that derailed. I actually wrote that book. I profiled 6 world famous CEOs that had been fired by their boards. And it turns out they were all essentially fired for the same reasons. It was compromise of character. I did say lack of self-awareness, oddly enough, is a common denominator among people that derail. They are not clear about their own inner workings, their motives. They don't pay attention to what they say to people. The second thing I noticed is that arrogance is the mother of all derailment. Arrogance often leads to hubris, and hubris leads to a fall. That's a biblical principle, I might add, but it's just a principle of life that arrogance does not serve us well.
Yeah. And you say, what do you say about humility, Dr. Irwin?
Well, humility is the remedy. In other words, if arrogance is the mother of all derailment, humility is the mother of all safeguards. It insulates us, and it's like integrity. It insulates us. It protects us. You know, I sometimes go into a corporation and I'm sitting in the executive team meeting and I'll observe a person or two and they have what I like to think of is they really believe they're the smartest guy in the room. And the things that they say are often diminishing of others and promoting of themselves. And that person is often short-lived.
So what are some practical ways for people to become more self-aware? Here's the thing. Don't you think these are things that really, they don't have to stay where they are, right? I believe you can move the needle on these things by doing certain things.
We've learned a lot over the last 15, even 20 years about a quality called emotional intelligence. And IQ is pretty well fixed. In other words, it can be developed to a degree, but emotional intelligence is fluid. There's neuroplasticity. In other words, we can develop new behaviors, new characteristics, and self-awareness is a characteristic of emotional intelligence, emotional maturity. And so I think there are a variety of things that help us there, but one is just being open to feedback. If we'll listen to feedback from others, we'll learn a ton of stuff. A Scottish poet said that, "Would to God that we could see ourselves as others do." Now, there's a tremendous privilege in terms of being able to see what others see. We exist in the perceptions of others. Those perceptions aren't always right, but they often are. Another thing, this is an odd phenomenon, but as we self-disclose, there's a lot of literature in the last 10 years about authenticity and leadership. It's very endearing to self-disclose, to talk about our struggles, our challenges. And I don't mean TMI. I mean, I don't mean we have to give too much information, but just talking about ourselves and where we struggled or where we felt like we didn't succeed. It's a very endearing quality. And that process of being willing to be open and transparent often helps us better understand ourselves. And then finally, just being aware of other things. I like assessments. I mean, the Myers-Briggs or any number of others gives us insight about how God has made us, who we really are. This may sound a little weird, but hey, I'm a psychologist, right? You know, I think sometimes dreams are just dreams. They're just our brains kind of playing with us or processing the day's events. But I think every now and then the dream means something. So all those things make us more self-aware.
So being open to feedback, you've got to have people in your life that you trust, that have your best interests at heart, and they'll tell you the truth. We don't need a bunch of bobbleheads. We don't need people just nodding their head at anything that we say or do. We need people that care enough about us and love us enough to tell us the truth about ourselves.
We also have to be willing and convey that willingness to others to hear the feedback. In other words, that we are welcoming. Some people say they want feedback, but then they're brittle or defensive or have behaviors that just don't indicate we really receive that well. And so I think being open with people that we want their feedback, we want their comments. And hopefully that's from people who have good insights about who we are.
I love that. And I do think people are longing to see real people. And what that does as the leader, and I know you know Dr. John Townsend, and I'll never forget him saying, you know, vulnerability is so important with a leader, because what it does is it gives the people that you're leading permission to admit their own shortcomings, right?
No question. And self-disclosure is a very important quality of leaders, being willing to talk openly. And leaders have a lot of secrets. I mean, they know what's about to come around the corner. They know if we're doing something that's going to be difficult for people to learn about, a downsizing or whatever else. So they can't just have no restrictions in what they talk about. But for the most part, self-disclosure is a very healthy habit for a leader.
Yeah. And you said that arrogance precedes derailment.
Exactly.
What do you think, you know, that arrogance, that hubris, where does it come from? You know, is that our self-talk and what we start believing? You know, we start believing the press releases, I guess, if you will.
Well, that's exactly what happens, is our beliefs form our behavior. Our beliefs guide our behavior. And if we tell ourselves that we're the most virtuous or we're the smartest or any number of other things, we tend to act that way. And it leads to arrogance. The other thing that leads to derailment, though, is arrogance, I think, gets the ball rolling. but also it's when we ignore the warning signs. And somebody that is arrogant just dismisses feedback. There have been a lot of examples in the corporate world and the political world where people were given a lot of heads up. Hey, this is not going well. There was a senator from North Carolina. He was having an affair. His wife had cancer, and it was just really sordid. And some people in his party came to him and said, listen, you got to knock this off. You are not going to go anywhere. And he just blew it off and kept doing what he was doing. So paying attention to those warning signals is important. And if you're arrogant, you close your eyes to that feedback.
Yes, right.
We also rationalize, and this is really important. I like to think of rationalize as rational lies. They're things we tell ourselves and they sound reasonable, but they're simply not true. One of those rational lies is, look, I'm the leader. I don't have to play by the same rules as everybody. I get special treatment. I don't have to follow the rules. Did you know that CEOs speed more than other drivers?
Because they think that they deserve, because, oh, I'm so busy, I got to hurry and get there.
Everybody's depending on me. And so that justifies I don't have to follow the law. Now, all of us speed, but I'm just saying there's that justification process that goes on in our minds and hearts that says, hey, I can break the rules.
Yeah. Well, tell me this. I know that you talk about the three faces of a leader. Tell our listeners about that, if you would.
Well, the best way I like to illustrate this is, do you ever talk to yourself? I suspect you do. In other words, and I would ask the same question to your listeners of this podcast. We all talk to ourselves. In fact, scientists tell us we speak probably twice as many words to ourselves that we do to others. I was in the gym the other day and I was just feeling lazy, sluggish. I didn't want to be there. I heard my voice saying, come on, get going. Well, who was I speaking to? I was talking to myself. I was trying to say, quit just sitting here, get on with this workout.
Get busy, right.
And so that's a really important thing to be aware that we talk to ourselves. And when we talk to ourselves, we tell ourselves things that are either true or they're not true. And some people say, as I mentioned before, I'm the smartest person in the room. If you tell yourself that, it goes into your core. That's the person inside us. That's what I mean by core, that we have a person living inside us that we talk to. That person inside us forms opinions and very much drives our behavior. And so if we don't guard that core, if we don't guard the beliefs that go in there, and we're flooded today with media, with not only social media, but we're all watching more TV, we're staying at home, and we're not going out as much. Movies and other kind of media tend to influence our belief systems, and those belief systems affect our behavior. And if we don't guard our core, if we don't vet the things, in other words, if we don't vet what we read, if we don't vet what we see on TV, what we listen to, if we don't vet that, it's just going to lodge in our core and start to affect us.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Irwin, we've got so much more to talk about. I want to dig into Extraordinary Influence. I love that book, but we do need to take a quick break and we'll be right back with Something Extra with Dr. Tim Irwin.
Are you a rising IT leader? Could you benefit from a network of like-minded peers? Let me introduce you to the St. Louis Technology Leadership Experience. This one-of-a-kind program gathers cohorts of IT professionals for three workshops: peer small group problem solving, one-on-one mentoring by IT executives, and multiple networking events. You'll be prepared for your next steps as an IT leader by gaining core leadership competencies and a strong, powerful network of peers. To apply for our next TechLX cohort, visit tpi.co/TLX.
So welcome back to the Something Extra podcast with Dr. Tim Irwin. So Tim, we've got so much more here to talk about. We're going to try to jam it all in this last half. I really want to dig into Extraordinary Influence. I love this book. It is based on Colossians 4:6, which says, let your conversation be always full of grace, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how to answer everyone. I had a journal entry this morning. I'm a big journaler.
We should all do that more.
Yeah, but my journal entry this morning was small things matter. And I said, the tongue weighs less than 2 ounces, yet the power of it can wield and crush a spirit to smithereens. I mean, it is such a small thing, but man, the power of the tongue. And so, that verse just goes right along there. This whole book is about this. And so I'd love for you to dig into that a little bit.
One of the things that has been very transformational in the last 8 to 10 years is that more and more brain research is emerging. We have the methodologies, we have the tools, the devices, the MRIs, and so on to look at the brain under various conditions. And one of the things that has emerged is our brains flourish under affirmation. They wither under criticism. And so the fact that we've learned this should be telling us something the Bible's been telling us for years, that words of life give us life. And so the brain is wired. We have this area of the brain called the amygdala, and it's wired for negativity. It's on the alert. It's constantly asking the question, am I safe? If we go to a party or a meeting or something where there's a gathering of people, we go in and our brain is on overload asking, am I going to be safe here? I mean, not physically safe so much, although there are times when that may be an issue too, but more importantly, am I emotionally safe? Am I going to be treated badly here? Is my self-esteem going to be treated roughly? But the amygdala is on hyper alert for that. And so I talk about banning the phrase constructive criticism. There is no criticism that's constructive. What I talked about in that book was how do we give feedback? Number one, giving affirmation is really important. It just tends to help people tremendously. And if we want to build somebody up, if we want to bring out the best in them, we need to use affirmation. And we need to use methods of giving feedback to people that bypass, that hijack the amygdala.
Yeah. And you say, what is one of the most hated things in a company?
It's the annual performance appraisal. And the reason is it just plays into these aspects of brain science that we now know are categorically true, that constructive criticism, as it's often called, just does not work. People show up for their annual appraisal and they're just not prepared to listen. But when we give words of life to individuals, it really transforms them. Now, that's not to say that we shouldn't give feedback to people. In other words, if you are managing other people, if you're the leader of the company, you very much need to sometimes give contrary feedback that somebody is, quote, doing something wrong. I've found through research and study, there's some ways of doing this that bypass. So, for example, if you have an employee, you can say, Joe, listen, I know you joined our company because you really agree with the mission. You like what we're trying to do. You like what we're doing for our customers. And so I know you want to excel at that. And I want to just mention some things that I think if you will do, will help you fulfill that mission. Something that's even more powerful is if you say, Joe, look, I know you want a bigger job. You want a bigger office. You want to grow in your title and make a bigger contribution here. And listen, I'm all for that. In fact, I want you to have my job. I want you to someday be the CEO. I mean, there are just all kinds of things that you can affirm somebody for, but then say, Joe, in order to do that, here are some things that will help you be more likely to accomplish that. And we just go right around that defensive part of the brain. We can speak very openly to people.
Yeah. And you say if you speak the words of affirmation to their core, it is the most transformational thing.
It's incredibly powerful. I've had more people start actually to cry. When you touch their core, when you breathe life into someone in that manner, it just touches a part of them. And unfortunately, that part of us gets touched way too seldom.
You say ways to affirm is do it often and do it early. So the closer the affirmation is to the event, the better, right? So like, that's why the performance review is so hard, because it's like, you may be talking about something that happened 6 months ago and it's not even in my brain anymore.
You could have solved world hunger in January, but by December, who remembers?
Yes. So go ahead and call that out. One of the other things that you said is showing the value for your people. Be responsive. We can all be responsive. If you as a leader, if you've got somebody that reaches out to you, don't wait 76 hours before you get back to them. Because then the person's like, well, I didn't even know if they are even listening to what I'm asking. You know, try to respond within 24 to 48 hours. So there's some very simple tactical things that we can do to really change our behavior in this regard.
No question. We don't have to do a deep words of life affirmation to people. You can just say, hey, I thought you did a great job of leading that meeting. I thought people were engaged. You got everybody involved. We got some really good ideas out on the table. We got some consensus about what we want to do. I just think you did a great job. Or another way would be to say, Susie, you have this new marketing initiative, and the way you involved some of the other departments in getting their input and ownership of this just caused us to smoothly move forward. And I thought you did that very skillfully. And I just want to encourage you that I noted that and that it was really well done. But then there are moments when you really want to go to the core and you just say, Susie, I just want to tell you, you handled that beautifully. I thought you showed great integrity and great judgment when you went to that person, you went to them individually, you told them that you'd had a problem with them along these lines and that you wanted to fix it. You tried to have some relational integrity in the way you did that. And I think it absolutely transformed your relationship with that person over in the other department. So, you know, when you start talking about somebody's insides, when you talk about their integrity or their judgment or any number of other things, that goes to the core.
Yeah, I love it.
It's the language of the core.
Well, before we move on from that, I just want to read a few things right here. And then I really want to move into our family, because this is not just in the workplace. I mean, this words of life, words of death, we can be speaking to our families too. But here's what you say on affirmation. There's some outcomes from affirmation that are really positive. One is increased productivity. You're going to reduce stress, which goodness knows we need to do that. Actually, words of affirmation boost our immune system.
Isn't that amazing?
It's incredible.
It actually is. By affirming people, you're making them healthier, not only emotionally, but actually physically.
So we need to do it more. But let's move into family. So give us some thoughts around this. I mean, a lot of our listeners probably do have children. Some of them, you know, are probably still small. And then some, like mine, are adults, and yours are too. But talk to us about like how we can do this in our families.
Well, I talk to so many people every week, and often they talk about just the difficulties when they were being raised as a child. I mean, things that parents said to them, you never forget those things. They just go deeply into our core. And parents often miss the opportunity to really affirm and to encourage their children. And I just think that is so important, just helping them to realize that they are a precious gift and that they need to be affirmed. But we're tired. You know, we're parents. We've been working all day. You know, we've had a hard week. Our boss yelled at us. And sometimes that just goes home with us. And we really need to check that at the door.
Yeah. I was reading McKinsey's study last week and talking about incivility in the workplace, rude emails. You know, let's extend grace to people, you know, because there is a ripple effect that sometimes we don't even realize, because you get that rude email at the office, and you carry that right home to you with your family.
And you're still working on that when you walk in the door and you've got kids and a spouse that need to see you. They need to see you at your best. And yet often we've spent all of our day's energy pellets trying to deal with problems at work. It is a challenge, but children in particular need to be nurtured. They need to be developed, and they need to be affirmed.
Yeah. And there is a section in your book, The Extraordinary Influence, How Do We Bring Out the Best in Others? But you call it the conundrum of hardship and adversity. And I know for myself, I have struggled with this. I feel like in many cases, and I'm just being very vulnerable and authentic here on the podcast, I have tried to remove the struggle for my kids. I've tried to make things better for them, you know, remove the adversity. Oh goodness, I don't want such and such to be hurt by this, so I'm going to go in and rescue. You got a beautiful story about that though.
That's exactly right. And I would just ask simply, why do we go to the weight room in the first place? In other words, we don't get stronger through ease. We get stronger through effort. And there are just so many great examples. We have a wonderful gift here in Georgia, south of Atlanta. It's called the Day Butterfly Center, Cecil Day. And I gave the money for a butterfly atrium at the Callaway Gardens. If you're ever going through Georgia, you need to take a detour and see this. At any one moment, there are 1,000 butterflies flying around in this big glass room. We were taking a tour, and one of the instructors pointed out how the various stages butterflies go through. The most key phase is when they're wrapped inside this chrysalis. It's a hardened shell. And when it's time for the butterfly to come out, they start to push against this chrysalis. And by then it's brittle and they start to break it open. And we were watching one butterfly who was almost out. And I said to the instructor, why don't you go ahead and just clip that little spot so the butterfly can get away? And he said, that would be great. He says, the problem is butterflies' wings are solar powered. And when they're pressing on that shell, that chrysalis, they're pushing fluid into their wings in these little tiny capillaries. And if you deny them the effort, that fluid's not going to be in their wings. They'll fall to the ground and be eaten by a predator. And so, you know, I wanted my children to have an easier life than I did. I wanted them to have more advantages. I wanted them to not. I had a job when I was 6 years old. And, you know, I wanted my children to have an easier, but at the same time, we're so tempted to insulate them from adversity. You know, we want to step in and maybe keep them from suffering harm or pain or whatever else. But the reality is that's what makes us resilient adults, is if we learn to deal with stress, if we learn to deal with adversity and hardship, and if they make a bad grade on a test, you just say, hey, sorry about that, but what are you going to do to fix it? Now, how can I help?
I think we could probably do a whole podcast just on this, Dr.
Irwin. I think we could too. I think we could too.
I kind of teed this up at the beginning, so I did a teaser, and I feel really badly if I don't have you tell the blue suitcase story real quickly, because there's a great point to it. And can you just tell this story real quickly?
Because I'll give you as short a version as I can think of, but I was invited to speak to a group of leaders who were gathering in France some years ago, and my spouse Anne and our two sons were actually invited to go with me. So Anne booked the tickets, but she came to me about a month before the trip and said, you know, I've always wanted to go to Portugal. You know, I've checked with the travel agent. We can fly through Portugal the weekend before, and I'll have this lifelong dream fulfilled. And I said, look, that's great. If you can do this and find a hotel. I was really busy at the time. I didn't have a chance to talk about it very much. I said, you just take care of it and we'll go. So anyway, she booked us into a hotel. We flew over on a Thursday. Before we had left, the hotel confirmation arrived. And when I opened this letter from the hotel there in Portugal, I saw the cost of the room and it was unbelievable. I didn't know you could charge that much for a hotel room. I mean, it was just terrible. And I went to Anna, I said, honey, we just can't do this. And she said, I knew you'd be upset. So what I've done is I got the old blue suitcase out of the attic and I've packed it full of food. And so I'm taking all our meals. The extra money that the hotel cost, we're going to spend on meals. And so she had very resourcefully packed little boxes of bran flakes. And there's this milk called Parmalat that doesn't have to be refrigerated, and Gorp and some fruit and things like that. And so anyway, we got up that first morning and she handed me the bran flakes and it was dreadful. I mean, talk about eating bran flakes with warm milk. The worst thing is that when we got on the elevator to go out and tour Portugal, it stopped on the mezzanine floor. And as the doors opened, you look straight into this spectacular hotel dining room. I mean, the tables were unbelievable, the ice swans, the flowers, and this array of food that you just can't even imagine. As the boys and I looked in there and read our minds, I mean, she knew exactly what we were thinking about. The odd thing is that everybody in that room was happy, and I knew they were happy because of where they were eating. But anyway, we went off down into Portugal and toured around. At lunchtime came, and she handed us a can of tuna fish with a pull-top ring and some saltines. We bought a Coke from a street vendor, and that was lunch. We did this for 4 days. By the end of that 4 days, our boys were bordering on hostility because they didn't have their normal caloric intake. But the night before we left, I went down to the hotel desk. We were flying out the next morning, and I just said, hey, I just wanted to see my bill, make sure everything's in order. We're leaving early in the morning. And as I turned around, the hotel desk clerk said, Mr. Irwin, have you made your reservation for breakfast in the morning? And I turned around and looked at her, and there was obviously some confusion. In the next 10 or 15 seconds, it became clear that all of our meals were included in the price of the hotel. Now, we had been eating the most dreadful food imaginable for 4 days when, in fact, it was our right to be eating in the dining room. We should have been eating all of our meals in the dining room. We paid for them. It was our perfect right to be there. We should have been in there with all the other happy guests. It took me a few months to get over that, but by the time I really began to think about it, I thought, what a perfect metaphor for how so many of our companies work. You know, we eat out of the suitcase of mediocre performance. We could be eating in the dining room. Our employees want to make a contribution. They want to excel, but so many times we prevent them from doing that. And so I just urge leaders in the strongest of terms, make sure that you are taking full advantage of the gifts and the talents that your employees have.
You know what? What you didn't tell the listeners is that you had to fly out so early. You didn't even get that last breakfast.
Even the last breakfast we missed because we were on a 7 o'clock flight and they didn't open early enough. So
Right, exactly. That
was the bitter irony of learning that we should have had all those meals.
Right. Well, Dr. Irwin, this has been so much fun for me. I literally could just talk to you for hours and hours, but we do need to wrap up here. So I have to ask you, what is the something extra that every leader needs, Dr. Irwin?
Well, I think the most important thing is that leaders have to do a lot of really big things. They have to work on strategies. They have to understand their markets. They have to design strategies that will reach their customers and deliver things well. You know, we're struggling with supply chain now, making sure that we are just overcoming these barriers to our best ability. But what really makes a difference in leadership is not so much what the leader does, but who he or she is. It's that person of the leader, the person inside, That's ultimately what makes the biggest difference. The integrity, the values, the affirmation that he or she gives. It's not to minimize the importance of what the leader does, but ultimately the biggest impact is made by what's inside us.
That is beautiful. I love that. Well, tell me, is there anything coming up that you're excited about? How can our listeners find you if they want to engage more? Dr. Irwin, tell us about that.
Well, my website is drtimirwin.com. And Irwin is spelled with an I, by the way, I-R-W-I-N, drtimirwin.com. And I can be reached through that website. Listen, I get up every day excited about what I'm going to be doing. So I love what I'm doing. I am working on a new book. And the last book was How We Bring Out the Best in Others. This book is going to help how we bring out the best in ourselves. I think it's going to be my most important book so far. Anyway, that's underway.
That's underway. So is there an ETA on that?
Not yet.
Not yet.
Publishers ask for some advanced materials. And so I'll be getting those together over the next month or two.
Yeah, well, make sure that you let us know how we can get that book and pre-order, because I love your material. Well, Dr. Irwin, this has just been such a delight and such a pleasure to have you on today. Thank you so much for making the time. I know how busy you are, so I'm very honored and humbled that you'd made the time.
Lisa, thank you. It's great being on you. I love talking with you, and we always have good conversations.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.